The sunlight, pouring through the mess window, deepened to a sickly red and started to fade. Alcat wondered woozily if the alchemist was already at work on it. But then the stimulant programs steadied her thoughts, and she realized she was in free fall, her cabin illuminated by a weak pink-tinged emergency light. People were floating around her. Beasling's crew, murmuring in quiet, worried tones. Something warm and damp brushed against her cheek, sticking. She brought her hand up instinctively. A swarm of dark motes swam across her field of view, glistening in the light. Blood. Peter! She thought she was shouting his name, but her voice seemed very faint. Peter! Easy, easy! That was a crew member. Menzel? He was holding her arms, preventing her from bouncing around the confined space. She caught sight of Peter. Two more crew were hovering over him. His entire face was encased by a medical nanonic package which looked like a sheet of thick green polythene. "Oh, merciful Mary!" "He's okay," Menzel said quickly. "He'll be all right. The nanonic package can cope." "What happened?" "A squadron of Blackhawks caught us. An antimatter blast breached the hull, screwed us pretty good."
"What about the alchemist?"
Menzel shrugged loosely. "In one piece, not that it matters much now."
"Why?"
Even as she asked, she didn't want to know. "The hull breach wrecked 30% of our jump nodes. We're a Navy ship. We can jump with 10% knocked out, but 30? Looks like we're stuck out here. 7 light-years from the nearest inhabited star system." At that moment, they were precisely 36.5 light-years from their G3 home star, Garissa. If they had trained the Beasling's remaining optical sensors on the faint diamond of light far behind, and if those sensors possessed sufficient resolution, then in 36 years, 6 months, and 2 days, they would have seen a brief surge in the apparent magnitude, as Omiato's mercenary ships dropped 15 antimatter planet-buster bombs on their homeworld. Each one had a megatonnage blast equivalent to the asteroid impact which wiped out the dinosaurs on Earth. Garissa's atmosphere was ruined beyond redemption. Superstorms arose which would rage for millennia to come. By themselves they weren't fatal. On Earth, the shielded arcologies had sheltered people from their heat-wrecked climate for 5.5 centuries. But unlike an asteroid impact, where the energy release was purely thermal, the planet busters each emitted the same amount of radiation as a small solar flare. Within 8 hours, the rampaging storms had spread the nuclear fallout right across the planet, rendering it completely uninhabitable. Total sterilization took a further 2 months. Chapter 2. The Lysilf home planet was located in a galaxy far removed from the one which would ultimately host the Human Confederation. Strictly speaking, it wasn't a planet at all, but a moon, one of 29 orbiting a gas supergiant, a formidable orb 200,000 kilometers in diameter, itself a failed brown dwarf star. After its accretion had finished, it lacked enough mass for fusion ignition, but nonetheless its inexorable gravitational contraction generated a massive thermal output. What was ostensibly its night side fluoresced near the bottom end of the visible spectrum, producing a weary ember-like glow which fluctuated in continental-sized patterns, as the dense, turbulent clouds raged in never-ending cyclones. Across the dayside, where lemon-shaded rays from the K4 primary sun fell, the storm bands shone a lambent salmon pink. There were 5 major moons, with the Lysilf planet, the 4th out from the cloud tops, and the only one with an atmosphere. The remaining 24 satellites were all barren rocks, captured asteroids, junk left over from the solar system's formation, all of them less than 700 kilometers in diameter. They ranged from a baked rock ball, skimming 1,000 kilometers above the clouds, from which the metal ores had boiled away like a comet's volatiles, up to a glaciated planetoid in a retrograde orbit 5.5 million kilometers out. Local space was hazardous in the extreme.